Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So, without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Hello, and welcome to episode 56 of New Shooter Canada. Tonight, we're going to be talking hunting with Grant McCartney. We have him on as a guest. He's going to be joining us for the whole entire show. Hi, Grant.
How's it going?
Good. And we have George with us as well.
Hello.
Hello. And we have Thomas, but Thomas is actually MIA for a little bit. He'll be joining us a little bit later. And that, we're changing things up a bit tonight. We're going to be doing our interview with Grant first, and then we'll get to what we did in Guns and that as well, just because we're waiting for Thomas and that as well. So, to the main topic. We've got to change things up every once in a while. Tonight we're discussing hunting. The hunting season is well underway, and tonight we were actually supposed to have two people joining us, but Darlene McKenzie wasn't able to join us at the last minute, so we have our friend Grant McCartney, from who we knew from Mapleseed, joining us to talk about the benefits of hunting and what types of rifles and shotguns and everything else to use, as well as ammo, and also how to prepare the meat that gets harvested as well. So, welcome to the show, Grant.
How's it going, guys?
Good. So, tell us all about yourself, for people who don't know who you are.
Well, my name is Grant McCartney. I'm currently living in Kapuskasing, Ontario, up in northeastern Ontario, and been hunting for a long time. Started when I was young with out with my grandfather and my dad and things like that, and then moved down to southern Ontario. I guess I was 10. Spent a bunch of time in the Niagara region, got completely away from hunting and guns and all that fun stuff until after being done university and moving back to northern Ontario. And that's sort of where the hunting story picks up, maybe about 3 years ago.
Okay. So do you have friends that you go hunting with, or do you have, I know that you have a girlfriend. Do you go hunting with her, or does she hunt as well, or no?
She has done her, her name is Chelsea, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Chelsea.
Shout out to Chelsea for sure. Yeah, no, she spent a bunch of time in the bush with me. I got her to do her hunter ed and her PAL. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before. Anyways, not long after she moved up to Kapuskasing, we got that done. And sort of didn't take too much convincing. We had gone out for rough grouse one day, a few years, probably 3 years back now. And myself, Chelsea, and two friends of ours. The two friends are a couple, and the guy, Jesse, hunts, and his wife just comes for the ATV ride or the walk or whatever, but has no interest in hunting and doesn't want to be involved and things like that. Anyways, it was one of those days where everything just lined up and was perfect. We get to the spot to offload. It's about, I don't know, 50-kilometer drive from town into the bush. There we offload the ATVs, and we're headed further in, but the roads are too bad for the truck, sort of thing. So to get further, we drop the ATVs. I don't even have my ATV out of the truck yet, and Jesse, the other guy, has already shot a limit of rough grouse. And
wow!
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He was shooting 22, and I heard, you know, five shots basically almost back to back, and I'm going, okay, well, he's either found one bird and can't hit it, or he's trying to just get sighted in or something, right? And no, he comes back to the truck. He goes, I filled my limit for the day. He says, I don't know what you're doing. Anyway, so that day, it was just everything lined up. The weather was right. The wind was right. And there were birds everywhere. I think on our, you know, the whole day hunting, we saw something like 50 or, wow, 60 birds, like just a crazy number. It never happens like that. It's one of those days McClatchy has never seen, I'm sure.
Just going to say, and I think McClatchy just tuned out.
Yeah.
Stupid Ontarians.
Anyway, so I had Chelsea on the back of the ATV with me, and I just said to her, see, if you had your license, we could have, you know, another five birds, basically, for the day, right?
Right.
So that was sort of, after that, I think that sort of convinced her, and she's been out in the bush with us for the past two moose hunts. And lots of time on small game, on rough grouse. She's actually gotten really good at spotting them. It's nice to have another set of eyes. You know, if we do hunt a lot walking on smaller trails and things like that, but you know, everything, like you say, as soon as you get out of the municipal bounds up here, you're on Crown land. You can hunt anywhere and everywhere, right? So there's and roadside is actually really good grouse habitat. It's early successional vegetation, like, you know, small shrubs, clover, and they also come to the road for gravel, right? The birds, they eat small gravel to help them digest.
Yep.
So Chelsea's got really good at spotting what she calls footballs in the trees or along the roadside.
That's good.
Yeah, so yeah, Chelsea's been quite involved in the hunting, but I've got lots of other friends up here that I hunt with, a lot of coworkers and stuff like that.
Okay, and up there you have all kinds of different things. Like you have moose, you have deer, you have everything, don't you?
I have a pocket full of tags right now for all sorts of different things. So we've got small game species. We have three different types of grouse. We've got spruce grouse, rough grouse, and sharp tails.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, like you say, black bear, moose. The deer are here, but not really. South of where I am is sort of where you start to get into deer country.
Mm-hmm. It's more moose up there, right? Moose and bear.
Moose is definitely the you know,
the big one.
Opening day of moose season, there's no able-bodied man in town. Everyone is in the bush chasing moose.
Mm. Okay, so tell us about what's your favorite thing to go out and go hunting for?
I think probably this just started more or less last year, but I think waterfowl might actually be my favorite hunt right now. It's a completely different experience than, you know, sitting in a deer stand for a week or you know, sitting in a moose stand for a week and not actually ever seeing an animal. That happens. I mean, we I just got back from a week of moose hunting, and other than some fresh tracks on the second day, absolutely no sign whatsoever. Nothing was moving in the bush, but waterfowl can be like that too. You can go and get skunked, and the thing is, it's early mornings. Like you want to be set up in your spot before the sun rises. So you know, you put in all that early morning work and you can get skunked just as easily. But when it's on with waterfowl, it's, you know, it can be lots of animals and moving targets. And it's just, it's a bit different with big game hunting. You're really concerned about, you know, being quiet, being still, staying hidden. The game is very wary, whereas with waterfowl, you don't have to be as quiet. You can talk, you can have a conversation with the guy next to you, and the birds aren't far off, and they don't hear well, they just have amazing vision. So as long as you're hidden, you're good to go. But that's quite fun. Hunting waterfowl is especially in fields. We had a lot of experience hunting agricultural fields for ducks and geese, and it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking waterfowl, what's your favorite mallard?
Yeah. Ducks. Any of the dabbling ducks, but mallards for sure are tasty. You cook them like a steak.
Mm. Okay. So when you're hunting waterfowl, what type of gun do you use in ammo? Do you know?
Yeah, waterfowl. I'm using. I bought myself a nice toy there last year. It's a Benelli Super Black Eagle 2, so it's an inertia-driven 3.5-inch 12-gauge.
Wow.
Semi. Yep. It's a lot of fun.
And shot, what are you using?
I'm using 3-inch number 2, pretty much across the board.
Okay.
And I'll use that. It's got to be steel, though, right?
Correct, yeah. Steel or there's other metals that are allowed. It's just lead is not allowed. Like, when you get up into the sort of the more expensive shot shells, companies like Heavy Shot and stuff like that, they use bismuth and tungsten and other metals that I guess are higher density. They're more similar ballistically to lead, but are way more expensive. I just shoot, like I say, 3-inch number 2 steel for pretty much everything, geese, ducks, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, and the lead is more, I think that's for like environmental reasons, is that correct?
It has to do, from what I understand, has to do with the ducks actually, or all waterfowl, confuse it for grains on the bottom of water bodies.
Oh, okay.
So they find the pellet on the bottom of water bodies where they'd be searching for food, and they're ingesting it, and that's what's causing the issue. It's not so much lead in the environment. I think it's actually the waterfowl consuming the lead.
Right. Okay. Either way, it's going to be toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when you went out and did your moose hunting this past week, what did you bring with you for that?
For moose hunting, I'm shooting sort of a weird one-off gun. It's an FN Herstal patrol bolt rifle. So what it actually is a Winchester Model 70 action. Mm-hmm. And it's a new construction pre-1964 action. So it's a controlled round feed action, but they changed their design from a control round feed to a push feed in 65, I guess. And anyways, this is new construction. I think it was built 2006 or 2007. I called Winchester just to find the story on it.
And what'd they say?
So like I say, it was built 2006 or 2007. It's this new pre-64 control round feed action. It's like I say, it's all FN Herstal written on it. So it's a patrol bolt rifle. I guess this would be, go in a cop cruiser or something along those lines. Uh-huh. What happened, I guess, is they were in the process of moving manufacturing facilities when FN took over Winchester or something along those lines. And they stamped the barrels. They stamped a typo in the barrels on the, I guess, the place. Fredericksburg. I can't remember which state it's in. Anyways, they stamped a typo in the barrel. So they realized this, and I guess they just liquidated a bunch of barreled actions, like, on the internet. Or I'm not exactly sure. Uh-huh. Anyways, this gunsmith, do you guys know where the Silverdale Range is in Niagara?
No. I've heard of it, but I don't.
Anyways, it's a pretty big facility, but just down the street from there, there's this hole in the wall gun shop called Frontier Gun and Sport. Uh-huh. And this guy he's got to be in his 80s. It's him and his wife who run this place. And this was the first gun that I bought after getting my PAL. Everything else I had a bunch of inherited guns from my dad and grandfather and things like that. This was the first, this big game gun.
Yeah.
Is the first thing I bought after that. And so I go into this Frontier Gun and Sport in Pelham, Ontario. It's like, from the outside, you wouldn't even know if the place is open or not. Anyways, you go in there. He sells mostly used stuff, but he had this FN barreled action that he had put in a Boyd's laminate stock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's pretty. It's a nice gun. It's chambered in 300 Winchester Short Magnum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's got a floor plate magazine, like a magazine inside. Which is probably the only thing I don't like about it. I wish it had a detachable box magazine, but.
Mm. And what was the rifle called again?
It's an FN Herstal Patrol Bolt Rifle.
Mm. Hmm. Okay, Silverdale. Isn't that the place that had the issue with the fire? Wasn't it?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know either. Anyways,
I know they've had lots of fun with the baffles and the CFO, though.
So, you love this gun. Other than you wanted a detachable.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's just a sweet one-off, right? It's a barrel with a typo in a Boyd's laminate stock that I bought from, like I said, this guy only deals now in used guns. He doesn't even deal in new guns anymore. He's a stock maker is what he is. He works with wood. You go in there and you just see the racks of, high-end shotguns that he's got customers, lined up for custom stocks for and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell us about your best and also your worst hunting experience.
Best and worst hunting experience.
Have you had any?
Yeah, for sure. That's a pretty broad question, though.
How about your worst?
I'm not sure. That's the one that I'll start with the best. I think best hunting experience would have been my first deer 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. We're down hunting private land south of North Bay. And I'm sitting on this ridge where two valleys meet. And been sitting for hours, and all of a sudden I'm starting to hear over my left shoulder, I'm starting to hear, you know, footsteps, leaves and sticks cracking, things like that. And so finally comes around the corner of the valley, and it's three moose. It's a cow moose followed by two bulls. So here I'm on a deer hunt, and the moose season's closed, and, you know, so I'm just, at this point I've conceded sort of, okay, my night's over. I've got about an hour 15 left of legal shooting light. I'm just going to watch these moose, see what they're up to, right? So they move across, and in behind a sort of a thicket of balsam and stuff like that. And I see the cow. She comes out the other side of the thicket, and then I just hear just the most intense racket of the other two bulls sort of sparring, locking antlers, going at it, the whole thing in this little balsam thicket. And this goes on for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this is something to see, right? Mm-hmm. And completely distracted by that. Next thing I know, I've got a doe. She's coming in from the other direction to see what's going on, like trying to figure out, you know, just just what's going on. It's like a barnyard. There's the two bulls fighting this whole thing. Anyway, so she walks out. She's quartering towards me and just slowly feeding along the bottom of the valley. Keeps working towards me. And I'm the whole time I'm thinking, if she doesn't present a good broadside shot soon, she's going to end up spooked, because these moose are going to come tearing out here, and, you know, everything will be, I'm going to lose the opportunity. Anyways, it didn't happen. Finally, she turned, still a little bit quartering towards me, but turned enough that I could get a good shot at her, and yeah, put her down. But unbelievable experience just watching the moose fight and having that somehow draw out a deer. You'd think you want to sit there, you sit there silent for days on end, and what brings the deer out is two bull moose fighting.
And a woman wanting to know what the hell's going on.
That's it. Yeah.
Are they fighting over me?
Yeah.
Wrong species, I hope not.
Yeah. No, sounds like a great story. What about your worst?
The worst one, though, I'm not really sure. I can't think of a worse one off the top of my head. Maybe the other side of that same story. After she was down, the realization hits that you're 2 kilometers away from the road and you need to get it out to the truck, right?
Yeah. So,
but luckily we had a bunch of good buddies there, and we actually just sort of strung it up after gutting it and field dressing and things like that. We strung it up by the feet on a small tree that we had cut down, and took turns carrying it. So two people to carry it out.
Yeah, that was my next question. What do you do in with field dressing and in meat preservation while you're in the field? Anything special? You just said you guys picked them up and two at a time carrying it out.
Pretty much for a deer, yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's just that easy.
What about moose?
Moose is a whole different story, right? You're dealing mm-hmm. with an animal that's, you know, up to 1,000 pounds, and not easy to move. Once they're down, they're down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit different story. The gutting's the same. The anatomy is all the same. That part of it is the same. Everything's just bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually get it out, you typically have to cut it into four. Just to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends. Different people do it different ways, and every situation is different. Sometimes after gutting, you can literally just cut the animal in four using the saws, and, you know, some people use chainsaws.
Chainsaws, yeah.
Yeah, canola oil in the bar instead of, like, a regular oil, so that you're not, you know, getting oil in your meat and things like that. But there's much more delicate ways of doing it. You know, you can remove the four quarters, take off the four legs, and then in a moose, there's just a huge amount of meat left. So you've got your four quarters, then you've got your back straps, which are the loins that run along the spine on the top, on the outside of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the inside, between the back hips, let's say, there's the tenderloins in there. And then with a moose, there's so much meat up front. You've got a whole bunch of different cuts in the neck that can be used for roasts and stuff like that. There's also the brisket on the front, which is, you know, the typical cut that's used for making things like corned beef or Montreal smoked meat, things like that. So, yeah, moose can be much more challenging. A big thing to consider, and a big thing that the last couple weeks up here has been in play during the archery season for moose is just temperature. It becomes very challenging if you shoot a moose in, you know, plus 18, plus 20 degree temperature.
Yeah.
It takes time to get that, you know, that animal processed and out of the bush and into some sort of refrigeration or at least a cool garage. And at plus 20, it doesn't take long to spoil meat. We had a real interesting switch here. Basically, right at the beginning of October, we switched from those plus 18 days. And since then, we've been, hovering right around zero or just below zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen that down here too.
Yeah, so opening of the rifle season is the Thanksgiving long weekend, the Saturday, which I think was the 10th this year.
Yep.
So yeah, we had much more favorable temperatures for the meat side. But that being said, I've been battling snow just steady.
Yeah. Yeah, George had a little bit of snow today, and so did I as well. George, you woke up to snow today, didn't you?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. Not fun.
Yeah, we've been waking up to snow for about the past week. Pretty much the whole time that I was out at our moose camp, we were waking up to snow every morning.
Speaking of snow, tell us about tips for tracking. Do you have any?
Tips for tracking?
Yeah.
Knowing what the footprint of what you're chasing looks like is very helpful.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it sounds funny, but today, you know what, I went out for a walk for grouse today, and mm-hmm. It's been snowing the last couple of days, and the winds picked up this morning, and there's been snow coming out of the trees, and it's unbelievable sometimes what a piece of snow falling from a tree branch and landing in the snow on the ground, it can be so misleading as to what is a track versus what is just a piece of snow falling off a branch. Mm-hmm. I saw tracks today that looked like moose tracks that were just like, you know, it would be one right in the middle of the trail and then it didn't lead in either direction, right? So it was just a piece of snow that had fallen that sort of made a print that looked like a moose or, you know, prints that looked like snowshoe hair prints. And then mm-hmm. you see actual snowshoe hair prints and grouse tracks and all sorts of stuff. But, a little bit of fresh snow goes a long way if you're looking to track game, for sure. Another thing that we were using for moose hunting, the camp that we hunt out of is on a river that it's not there's no overland access to get to the camp,
mm-hmm.
and we use boats to get from the camp to different hunting spots and things like that. And we've had low water. We've had not very much rain all summer and low water conditions this fall. So you've got sort of a ribbon of mud or whatever along the bank that, you know, has been sort of a magnet for tracks. We didn't see too much, but where you did see tracks, it was clear as day because you've got this strip of mud that's all been disturbed along the side of the river.
Mm-hmm. So what about equipment? What types of equipment do you use? Do you use trail cams, decoys when you do waterfowl?
Yeah, I've never used a trail cam. The areas where we go for moose hunting it's just too far away. Like I wouldn't be out there changing SD cards. It just doesn't happen. Like to get there, mm-hmm. we're 20 kilometers by truck. You put the boat in the water. You're another 35 kilometers by boat just to get to the camp.
Wow.
So it's I'm not going to be out there changing SD cards in trail cams.
So it's luck of the draw whether you know something is there or is around that area.
Yeah, things got to be moving, and then, you know, everyone books their week of vacation. Typically we book it the opening week or around the Thanksgiving long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope that they're out and about while you're there.
Mm-hmm. What types of things do you use? Do you feed corn? Do you use doe urine? Do you, you know, apples, different things to try and draw out the deer, the moose, the ducks, and all of them?
For big game, no. I've never gotten into, like, any of the attractants or feeders or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how I feel about that. It's legal, it's effective, people make it happen, that's for sure. But to me, there's, you know, I'd prefer to either, well, A, get lucky, or B, actually start to be able to pattern these animals, right? Know where their natural food sources are, you know, figure out where the bedding areas are, figure out where they're traveling and where the game trails are, and you know, try to target them that way as opposed to setting out a pile of apples and sitting on the tailgate of my truck.
Yeah. Some people do it.
For sure, and it's effective. Yeah. And for some species in you know, I would say in eastern Canada, for some species like black bear, it's pretty much the only way you're going to get them.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I think it really kind of depends on the person. If I'm going out for the sole purpose of filling my freezer, I don't care how I have to accomplish that. All I care is I'm doing it legally. If that means I put down a bag of corn and shoot off the back of my truck, my goal is to fill the freezer, right? Whereas, like, I've been out with my cousin once, and that's, I'm not going to say a secondary goal for him, but going out and, like what you were just saying, Grant, getting to know the animals, getting to know their movements. He's very much kind of into that sort of stuff, too. Like, he gets a lot out of that as much as filling his freezer.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
There's a lot,
so I think
there's a lot to be said. Some people think, they'll talk about the ethical side of things, and if you're hunting, it being more ethical in the treatment of the animals and things like that. And if you're, you know, almost baiting them with corn and apples and even doe urine. Yeah, it's kind of iffy. Some people like it, some people don't. I know some people who do it, and I also know some people who wouldn't do it at all. So,
just to put that whole thing on its head there, Kelly, to twist that whole thing on its head,
mm-hmm.
I would say that almost everything that you hunt, you are shooting them over their food.
Mm-hmm.
With grouse, they're coming to, you know, either eat the buds off of the brushy, you know, small birch or alder or whatever it is at the roadside, or clover on the ground. I've that's one thing. Anytime I get a grouse, I'll open up the crop, their little pouch where they store food on the front of the neck, just to see what they've been eating. And typically you can, you know, wherever you shoot one, you're going to find that right in the general area. Same thing with deer though, right? You're targeting deer on their way to and from where they eat. Same thing with moose. Like pretty much any animal, you are... It's just whether or not you put the food out or whether you're hunting over their natural food, right? It's just I can see both sides of it.
True. Yeah.
To date, I've never.
Hello.
But I know.
Hi.
Hello.
A lot of people.
Thomas is joining us.
Answer it.
Okay, so we've talked about it a little bit before going onto the call tonight. Ministry of Natural Resources, have you had any positive or not so positive encounters with them in the field?
Yeah, I would say that I think all of the encounters I've had with MNR to date have been positive.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you know, at the end of the day, they're just out there doing their job, so... A typical stop would be, you know, checking to make sure you have a valid hunting license. They usually do, or sometimes anyways, I've had them want to inspect the firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And really it's just, at that time I was on a vehicle, which it can't be loaded, so that's all he wanted to see was that it was unloaded. But it actually turned out he was quite interested in the firearm, so we stopped and had to talk about that. It was a single shot Boido 410 shotgun break action.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, great hiking gun. It weighs almost nothing and perfect for grouse.
A little backpacker model.
No, it's not the backpacker. That's the only one you see available now, eh? Is that little short barrel backpacker model?
Mm.
This has got a full-length field barrel.
Oh, actually, I've never seen one of those.
Oh, it's fantastic for grouse. It's a fixed full choke and perfect. You can hunt all day with that. It weighs, I think, less than 4 pounds. Like, it's perfect just to carry around.
Carried around on a strap on the back?
Typically in the ready position. It's they're grouse,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
When they flush, you want to be all over that. Back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, shooting over bait and just sort of different people have different sort of philosophies on that. I heard an interesting story today up here for grouse. I mean, I don't know how everyone shoots them, but here, if there's a grouse standing somewhere, I'm not opposed to shooting a grouse standing somewhere. But apparently a friend of ours was up in the bush today, and he ran into a couple of Americans who were here, I think with a guide of some kind, and they were hunting over dogs for grouse. They're using pointers to flush the birds and things like that. Something I've never done, but these guys apparently, the story I was told is they were finding birds on the ground and refused to shoot a bird on the ground. They wanted it to be in flight before they took a shot at it, which is just, you know, you're talking about people's ethics and things like that. These guys were shooting larger shotguns, I think 20 gauge, and wanted it to be shots on the wing, like shots while the bird was flying, and weren't interested in it so much for the meat as opposed to, you know, they had their trained dogs and all the, you know, everything else that goes along with it, more so the experience. Must be because they came all the way from the U.S. to do it, right? So
I think it's more sporting if you take the bird in the air, but there's nothing that says you have to.
That's
I've come across that whenever I've gone duck hunting. I've always shot them while they're in the air, where some people will actually wait till they've landed and then blow them out of the water, which personally I think that's unethical.
I'm with you on that one, but with grouse, to me it's a different story.
Well, grouse are so stupid, you can just walk out to them and kick them. They don't move half the time.
It's true.
All right.
I have visions of Thomas having one of those shoes with a knife in it and walking up and clicking it out and just kicking the thing.
It's not that they're stupid, it's just they don't understand the threat, right?
Yeah, they don't. You can get, I've had to walk out and flush them myself to get them to take off, because, you know, if I wanted to eat it, I would shoot it on the ground, but it's just my thing. I tend to flush it first, but there's nothing that says you have to.
That's it.
Yeah. So, what about landowners? You said that have you had any issues with them? They've been supportive of your hunting. Obviously, the doe that you got, that was private land, you said, so you must have had the permission of the landowner to hunt on the land. And that, so, sorry. Any issues with landowners when you go out to hunt or anything?
Well, it's definitely something to be aware of, right? People's private property is their private property, and that's it. And if you expect to hunt on their land, you have to have permission. And, you know, it goes a long way to have good rapport with landowners. There's probably, out of all my hunting so far, I've dealt with two. One, like you say, for deer. And in that case, it was actually a gentleman who passed away in a helicopter accident that worked with us. And we sort of have kept the tradition alive. He was a big hunter, and there was an annual trip down for deer every year. So since his passing, his wife has been adamant that we keep going and sort of keep that tradition alive on the land. So that's a very positive relationship we have with the landowner there. We do anything we can to help out, a little bit of trail maintenance and upkeep, and it actually helps because no one lives there. It's just a sort of a piece of private land that's managed for forestry. So it just keeps a presence out there. You know, we go say hi to the neighbors and check in, you know, once or twice a year, things like that. So it actually helps out the landowner at the end of the day. The other one would be for waterfowl. Again, up here, it's, you know, I'm about 700 yards out my back door, and I'm on Crown land, like I'm out of town limits. It's, you know, so it's pretty easy that way. But for waterfowl, we do hunt some agricultural fields a little closer to town. And same thing there. You know, you try to check in with the landowner earlier in the year, as opposed to don't show up on opening day with your guns and expect to hunt, right?
Yeah.
That's a relationship you want to keep going. And obviously, always ask if there's anything you can do to help out the landowner. And, you know, it's always good etiquette, too, to offer up. You know, if they enjoy waterfowl, you know, would you like some of the harvest? Or would you like, you know, if you prepare a meal and, you know, bring some by, I'm sure the landowner's always appreciative of that.
And a bottle of liquor helps, too, sometimes.
I was going to say a bottle of rye goes a long way as well.
That was the deal that we had. We had to buy the guy a 40-pounder every year, and he passed away last year, so we don't have permission to hunt on the property anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
What about anybody, you know, have you had to deal with anybody who doesn't support hunting, that thinks that you shouldn't be out hunting?
You know, I haven't really had any real confrontations or issues with people who are against hunting, I guess. That being said, though, we do, you know, you try to be respectful. You don't, you know, you don't go into the grocery store in full camo or Hunter Orange, and, you know, you got to, just like gun owners, you got to put a positive face on the activity, right? You need to be respectful of other people's views. I have no problem if someone, you know, is against hunting, but I would also question how connected or their understanding of their own food system. Personally, I'd rather know where things came from my freezer, and not just find saran wrap pieces in the grocery store aisle.
Yeah, it's difficult, though. Sometimes people don't want to know where their food comes from, and that as well. You're right. It is more ethical.
Well, I just find it really interesting, like that whole concept that people don't want to think about.
They don't.
You know.
Yeah.
I think if they saw the way their meat was prepared and taken care of, they wouldn't be eating it.
That's it. Mm-hmm. You compare the life of a factory farm chicken to that of a rough grouse, and I think the rough grouse has had a much more fulfilling life.
He's had a nice long life, and it's over. At least he's not raised in a pen and force-fed powder in a little cage. If I worked at a chicken farm 1 week, just for 2 weeks, just to raise some pocket money, and I didn't eat chicken for quite a while after. It was quite disturbing to see how the animals were actually treated on the farm.
Mm-hmm. So what type of gun do you got on your wish list now? Anything else for hunting?
I'm not sure. I really... A lot of the folks I hunt with have gone to these Tikka T3s, which is a really sort of a nice mid-range bolt-action rifle out of Finland, and the actions are just unbelievably smooth. I'm not sure if...
Well, they're like butter.
If any of you guys have had your hands on these. Have you, Thomas?
Yeah, I fired the T3 Light in 270, and at 100 yards, it was a tack driver, and it's a short throw bolt, like a 60-degree bolt, so it's just like a flick of the wrist to get the action to open and close.
Yeah, they're very nice rifles.
They've gone up incredibly. I was looking at them a few years ago, and Williams had them on sale for like $550, and I was looking at them at the LeBaron catalog yesterday, and they're like almost $900 now. They've almost doubled in price.
Yeah, for sure. They're a very nice rifle, though, and that's actually... the Canadian Rangers, that's what they'll be getting. They'll be manufactured by Colt Canada, and it'll be built on that T3 action in 308 with most of the hunting rifles, the T3 Light, and all those have it's usually between a 3 and 5 round detachable magazine.
It'd be nice to see a hunting variant of that.
Of the Ranger rifle?
Yeah.
Well, it's available. It's called the CTR, the T3 CTR, Compact Tactical Rifle.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was available yet.
Yeah, well, so the Ranger rifle is based off of a Tikka production rifle.
Yeah, we did a news coverage of it 5 or 6 shows ago.
Yeah, that's going to be an amazing rifle. So that one's got a 10-shot detachable magazine, Picatinny rail, but the thing that gets me is the open sights. I think that's going to be, that has the potential to be just a really nice big game gun.
And it's got a larger bolt handle, and it's got an enlarged trigger guard, too, for gloves on it, from my recall.
Yeah.
It looks nice. It looks really nice.
Just don't lose a magazine, because I think they're worth about $200 each.
Oh, man.
Ouch. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
The regular plastic Tikka magazines are usually run about $80 to $90. These ones are a full metal magazine, similar to the... I can't think of the name of it. I want to say it's the Tikka TGR-42 or something. It's like a much more intense and expensive bolt action that they make. Anyways, the Ranger rifle will take the same magazines.
Now, this model is made in Canada, but Tikkas are normally made in Finland, are they not?
Yeah, Colt Canada, for the Rangers anyways, Colt Canada is going to be building the same people who make the SA-20s or the C7 and C8s. They're going to be manufacturing the Ranger rifles here in Canada, which is kind of a neat twist on the whole thing.
It should be nice.
Yeah, so if I could get my hands on one of those, it would be great. Probably in 308, and I'd probably leave it open sights as a deer gun. The T3 is also available in this Batsu configuration, which is in French means beaten or to beat. Or anyways, it refers to a more European style of hunting where you're hunting very thick bush. The guns are all open sights. So this version of the T3 is a short barrel and open fiber optic sights. There's a guy in our hunting group who has one in 3006 and has just been just deadly with the thing on deer. Just fast acquisition of sight picture with fiber optic open sights, and he's done well with it.
I'm looking forward to seeing one on the shelves. I haven't seen any of that variant out yet.
This short barreled open sight version I'm talking about?
Yeah, the one with the Picatinny rail, the Ranger version.
Oh, the Ranger version. Yeah, no, they're still demoing that with the Rangers. I have one friend who's in the RCR, and he actually had a chance to shoot it in Petawawa, and he said it's like you say, tack driver. The laminate stocks that it's in look pretty nice too.
Okay.
Something else to my want list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So, Thomas, you get right on that and see if we can get one to review for the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Colt Canada will give us a pre-production model.
Well, of course.
That'd be nice. I can see actually Modern Rifle and Radio wanting to review that. I can see Brian liking
that. Okay, you know what? He can share. So we did things a little differently, Thomas, tonight. We did the interview first, and then we thought... we would get into what we did in guns. So, since you joined us halfway through, so welcome to the show. You know?
I wasn't sure whether we were just going to do the interview and then edit it in, so you want to start from the beginning? What we did with guns this week?
Yeah, we're going to actually do that. We decided to change things up, so, you know, we hate to edit, or I don't edit at all. It's George who edits. Right, George?
He's muted. Yep.
So we decided to just do the interview first, and hopefully you got a chance to join us. And since Grant's going to be with us for the whole entire show, that's awesome too.
Okay, so you're lead host. I'll just do what you'd want.
Okay, so George, let's throw to you. What did you do in guns this week?
I drove the big boy truck this weekend, and that's it.
You did. Did you go on Monday to go shooting? You said that you might be going last Monday to go shooting.
No, I didn't make it out, unfortunately.
No, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant, you went moose hunting, right?
Well, yeah, so moose, in the past week I've hunted moose. I spent an afternoon trying to hunt ducks on the river and grouse hunting sort of all throughout.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's been a busy week.
Yeah, you had a good week.
Yeah, that being said, there's not too much in the freezer, but it was nice to have a week off. Any week spent in the bush is better than a week spent in the office.
Mm-hmm. So, Thomas, what about you?
I went shooting Monday.
You did?
I did. I went up on Sunday, and Dave installed the rear sight of my Excalibur, and I sighted it in. And I'm really happy with the gun now. My groups are well-centered and really tight. Number months ago, we were complaining to him, but I didn't think that the winded adjustments were locking, and it felt like there was no locking ball detent. Well, apparently they discovered at the SHOT Show last year that about 100 units of the new Mark 12s were shipped without the detent being properly staked in the sight by the manufacturer. And I believe they contracted that part out. It wasn't made by Grand Power. It was outsourced. So now they're actually making their own rear sight. So I took up the range, and I'm very, very happy with it. I did some reloading. I had to reset my die for my 9mm because I was not happy with the last box that I reloaded. Then it dawned on me that I'd bought 147 grain projectiles because that's what Dave and Grandpa said it would like, and had everything set up for the 125s that I normally loaded. So, and I forgot to adjust the dies for the longer set. So I got a couple hundred rounds loaded up, and they shot really nice. I also cleaned up 1,000 to 1,500 9mm brass. I had a whole bunch of brass sitting down in the basement because I haven't done any reloading for months. And I just have to go through them all and separate all the head stamps because you get much better accuracy if you shoot all the same head stamps.
Same. Yeah.
And George, you got a bunch of 223 coming away. I polished up probably 500 or 600 rounds of 223. I have no idea how many you're getting.
I just see that in the show notes, like a big smile on my face.
I've got two or three large sandwiches. Actually, I forgot to turn the tumbler off, and I left it on when I went to work today. So the ones that are in the tumbler are going to be nice and shiny. Oh. You're going to have to sort through them, though, because some of them were fired through 180B, and the extractor really tends to ding the case a little bit. So you'll probably get a few hundred usable brass out of that. And I got to test fire the new X-Trim K22 pistol that Grand Power came out with. And mm-hmm. I am very impressed with it. Super rimfire happiness. I posted the two test targets on Facebook, and Kelly and I'll have a chance to do a full review shortly. It's funny. Dave was saying that it didn't like standard velocity ammo; it only liked high velocity, which is true. The first group I shot with the standard velocity, I had no functioning problems because he said it's been reported that people had problems with the standard velocity. I didn't have any. But the high velocity actually grouped quite a bit tighter. The only problem I had was on both magazines, the first two rounds when I was sighting it in wasn't ejecting. And then it dawned on me, I was actually, because I was resting the magazine on the bench, the magazine was pushing up and stopping the round from extracting. Once I took it off the bench, it was fine.
It was better.
Yeah, so it's not a bench resting gun. But yeah, I'm really happy with it. So I'm looking forward to having some range time with Kelly, and she can play with it. And then we'll do a full review of it.
Yeah, I think next Saturday or Sunday. Depends. So we'll look at that. We'll have a look at it. And Kevin's going to test it too. He'll be around too.
I'll bring the Excalibur too, so he can do a comparison. Because all it is, basically, it's an Excalibur. The whole lower end is an Excalibur. It's the same ground power lower, the same rail system, same subframe. The only difference is that the barrel is attached directly to the subframe. Everything else is identical. So I think Kevin will like it.
Okay. I went to the range on Monday. I brought my cousin's stepson, Jason. He had a great time. He got to shoot the M&P 22, and he got to shoot the Glock. He is just new into the military. He just joined the Reg Force. And he was a cadet before, but he had no experience with handguns at all. So he loved it. We've taken him out once before, and when we took him before, he got to try out Kevin's Enfield and also his AR, but he didn't try the pistols, and this time he did, so he really enjoyed it. Got to go to the gun store yesterday. I didn't end up getting anything, but had a look around. I took a picture of a really, really nice revolver there and sent it to George. George, what did you think of that one?
You know what, to be honest with you, I kind of just looked at it rather quick.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So, anyways, it was a Colt 1873, so it was all original and everything, so it was a nice gun.
It was demanding a fair price for the amount of finish left on it.
Yeah, $4,000.
$4,000.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm looking at it right now. Am I off mute?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you're talking.
Well, that's cheap because one that
welcome
has all
to the show, George. Welcome
all the ones
show.
That have all the bluing intact, they're that are in mint shape. They're going for $10,000.
Yeah.
So this what is this? Oh, it's an 1873.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
4440. Apparently,
he's drooling now.
Apparently, it does not.
George, I got some gun porn for you. You're awesome.
You just noticed that, eh?
You're awesome.
I thought you would like it. I never heard back from you, so I don't know. Anyways, so we got to see that. That was a nice little gun. And also, I went to the range today. I really need to work on my dry firing with my pistol. That's what I learned. And I really hate the winter. So, it was cold, so I'm going to work on the dry firing in the basement. And that, and hopefully it will become spring soon. It's not even winter yet. Other than that, nothing else happening in guns in the news this week. So, or sorry, what we did in guns.
That is
guns in the news.
That is a
gorgeous pistol.
It is very nice. Yep. All the serial numbers are matching and everything as well. It was a really, really nice gun.
If you want some really nice gun porn, George, go into Accuracy Plus. He's got three of them mint condition. I mean, brand new in the box, mint. He wants 10 grand, and then he's got a 1873 Colt Bisley. He wants 25,000 for it, and it's mint too. But they're not selling. They've been on his website for a year, and nobody's buying them because there's so much money.
That's the problem, right? Like,
they're expensive.
I would have a very, very hard time justifying spending that much on a pistol.
Well, the one that Kelly posted, I could see shooting that. You know, that's it's well used, it's well worn. That one I take to a range, but to go out and spend $10,000 on a mint Colt, you're not going to want to shoot it because you just destroy any collector value.
Well, you got to shoot your guns.
Yep.
And that's my opinion.
I have no safe queens.
Okay. What about guns in the news?
You ever heard the expression before?
No. I did. I just I never.
A safe queen is a gun that just stays in the safe. You never.
No,
shoot.
I know what a safe queen is. I just was thinking of a different kind of queen coming out of your safe.
I don't think so, George.
Thanks, you guys.
That was the image I didn't want to have to live in my head.
Sorry, Thomas.
Guns in the news. I was actually speaking to Dean from Select Shooting Sports, and I, before I wrote this, I forgot there was an actual article that Caliber did a couple months ago, and I didn't even read the article. I went back, and they more or less said what I said about the gun, but I'll just read you what I wrote. Okay. Select Shooting Sports is now carrying the Alpha Project revolvers manufactured in the Czech Republic by BRNO. BRNO, people probably familiar with their rimfire rifles. The fit, finish, and the trigger on the Alpha model that I played with last year was on par with the Ruger's. It wasn't well refined as a Smith & Wesson product, but at a two-thirds of the price of their U.S. counterparts, these revolvers are really good value for the new shooter. But they have a new revolver coming out that's really piqued my interest. The new revolver is a model 9251, and it's designed 9mm specific, so which means it's not a 9mm 357 conversion guns. Previous models and other manufacturers do this too. They stick a shorter 9mm cylinder into a standard 357 frame, which means the barrel has to be set further into the frame in order to contact the short cylinder. This looks kind of off-center and with the short cylinder butted up with such a long portion of the barrel inside the frame. But this new model has a new frame that's specifically designed to fit the short cylinder, making it one nicely balanced package, and it also loads using moon clips. So I can see this revolver being really popular with action shooters wanting a faster loading, minor powered revolver. You can contact Dean at Select Shooting Sports. If you go, we put a link to this one product on his website. I think it's pre-order right now. He's just waiting for some stock to arrive. So check out his website. He's got Dean's got a lot of nice stock in there these days.
Do you know when he's expecting them to come in?
I don't know. I think right now Trigger Wholesale is the distributor out in that end. So if you go on their website, you'll see what's in stock, and whatever's in stock, the dealer can order.
Okay. Right. So story two I was going to do because of the fact that, one, we were talking about hunting tonight, but I also, with Darlene being on, and again, she wasn't able to join us, it was going to be about women and hunting. So this is an American story. I think it came out of Vermont, but it was published on CBC. So more women are taking up hunting, quests for local food, cultural shift behind the growth. So it was something that we were talking about in the interview as well. So more women are taking up largely male-dominated sport of hunting to stock their freezers with local food and as a cultural influences. Included movie heroines and marketers make it more socially acceptable. So they're talking about, the Disney movies with all of the females hunting, I guess. Anyways. Many of the new female hunters did not grow up hunting and are joining spouses or boyfriends in the sport, researchers say. Hunting outfitters are tapping into that. According to recent data from the National Survey of Fishing, Hunting, and Wildlife Association Recreation, the number of female hunters rose from 1.2 million in 2006 to 1.5 million in 2011, a 25% increase. From 2001 to 2011, the percentage of hunters who were female rose from 9% to 11%, so that's quite a huge increase. Cheryl Frank Sullivan of Underhill, Vermont, says hunting provides a sense of empowerment to be able to be self-sufficient. So that's a huge thing. Women. That's why a lot of people are getting into it. They want to be self-sufficient and feel the empowerment as well. Now more women are joining in the sport, and researchers say marketers are helping lure them in. It's almost like the chicken or the egg thing. There's certainly been a slight increase in female hunters. The marketing folks have grabbed onto that. They started using images of females hunting and shooting, so more and more females are doing it. So it goes on to say, Lisa Stinson of Velpen, Indiana, got drawn into it when she tried hunting about 12 years ago. She likes the peacefulness of going outdoors away from everyday life. The food is another bonus. I like the fact that it's fresh and I know where it comes from, she said. I know that there's no added hormones. So again, when we talked about this in the interview as well, we know where the grouse is coming from, and as opposed to the chicken. Anyways, more families are taking their daughters as well as their sons hunting, said Michelle Kane, a wildlife information specialist with the State Division of Fish and Wildlife in Indiana, where the number of hunting licenses sold to women rose from 17,541 in 2006 to 33,922 in 2014. So almost a 100% increase, so 93% increase to be exact. One explanation of the growth in female hunters is economics, says Mary Zustange, a professor of women's studies and religion in Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, and author of Women the Hunter. Women have more disposable income than ever before, and history of entering male-dominated areas of activity ranging from careers to recreational and other pursuits, she said. It's a cultural shift. When she and her husband go away for the weekend during hunting in the 1990s, she'd tell students and colleagues, if asked, that she was going camping or hiking, she said. Now, if female students are interested in hunting, she'll tell them. What we've been seeing is people are coming to hunting for a variety of reasons, but certainly among women and girls, it's all the reasons that attract men, like adventure, fun, exercise, and all that stuff, she says. But I think that it's an interesting sense in which, there is an interesting sense in which, on one hand, these girls and women are conscious that they're crossing certain boundaries that a generation ago they couldn't. So, yeah, women are feeling empowered and want to go hunting. And again, they want to know where their food's coming from. And also because of the fact that they're getting into it because of their boyfriends and that are into it. So, just like Grant said, Chelsea, right? She went hunting because of you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So
I find there's a lot more women hunting these days than when I was younger. I know a lot more female hunters these days than I knew 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's an age mix too. There's a lot of younger people getting into it, and I know some older girls that are enjoying hunting now, and they're quite proficient at it.
Experienced girls. Anyways, yeah. So they want to go hunting because of everything that we talked about, everything that guys like to do, but also because of the fact that, you know, it's okay to do it now. Before, generation ago, it wasn't as okay to do. That was a man thing.
Yeah, it was something that was a father and son.
I can't speak to the generation ago. Go ahead, Thomas.
I say, but back then it was a father-son thing, and nowadays you find it's really big being a father-daughter activity.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. The other thing, too, is depending on what you're after, like moose, for example. Moose is something that's typically party hunted in groups. Right, you can apply as an individual, but the system favors group applications, and to be successful for tags, especially like even where we are, you essentially need to apply as a group, and what that ends up being up here is it turns it into a family activity. So it's husbands and wives and the kids, and in cases of even our group, we were at a point where, you know, we had the grandparents, you know, everyone's involved. It's a complete family activity.
Well, it's true, too, because I noticed my my aunt, actually, I never knew she actually has her hunting license. And what they did when she was younger, just because they could get more people in the draw and more tags, all the girls got their hunting licenses and put their names in for the draw. They never hunted, but they got the tags.
I think that's playing the system, isn't it?
Yeah, but it works. Yes. It works. So I actually I talked her into since I think since her father passed, she hasn't gone with them for years. So I actually talked her into renewing her hunting license, and I'm gonna take her up to the range, take her shooting. But that's what they used to do back then. They would just get the girls to take the courses, get the tags, yeah. And they didn't always hunt with them. Unless you said it was a family activity where a lot of it was sustenance hunting. But it's so nice to see a lot of the women having the same passion and sharing the same passion that guys have nowadays, because they can go, they can hunt as partners.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of couples are getting into it.
Well, even Darlene has, her and her husband have been divorced for years. But they're still hunting buddies. They still go hunting all the time because mm-hmm. they've got the communication skill and they get along, and they still hunt together. Now she's got Ian. I don't know if she's hunting with him, but for years she still hunted with her ex-husband.
Sorry, Darlene.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'd be going hunting with my ex-wife.
Yeah. How'd that go? Yeah, loaded weapons.
If you've got a good relationship with your ex-spouse and you both enjoy hunting and you'd share the same land that you hunt on and you're successful together and you can maintain a friendship, why not? There's a lot of people that divorced and still become friends.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go on to emails. We've got a couple. George, you want to read the first email from Mark?
Sure. Hi, guys. I just happened to stumble upon this site. I haven't even watched one single video yet, but here's my first question to you. I'm very passionate about firearms, and I'm already a hunter, and I do like gunsmithing. I'm getting my restricted firearms license to purchase a handgun, and want to know. And what I want to know is this. What is the process of getting into competitive shooting? You know what, I'll go through all the questions first and then we'll go back and address them. Okay. What can I expect because I know nothing much about pistols to be a proficient shooter. I don't know if this is Thomas's editing or his...
No, nope, that's the way he wrote it.
Autocorrect is not friendly. Let me try number two again. What can I expect because I know nothing... Because
I know nothing much about pistols to being a proficient shooter, and it's getting into the Canadian sporting shoots and competitions.
Thank you, Thomas. There you go.
Try reading it like Dirt McGirt, maybe it'll go better.
Yeah.
He's probably like me and has a little tiny keyboard on his phone when he wrote it.
I know. I feel sorry for some of the people that received my messages or emails, because I'll go back and read them. I'm like, I'm having a hard time figuring that out. Number three, what is the best overall handgun, 9mm x19, and ammo? Is there anything I need as far as levels and credentials? Any info would be very appreciated. Looking forward to your input, Mark. And first, before we start, Mark, I am sorry for butchering your email.
So why don't we actually cover his second question, is what can I expect? Because I don't know much about pistols to be proficient with shooting and getting into the Canadian shooting sports and competitions. So, what can you expect about that? And then we'll go with the other questions and answer them one by one.
Okay, well, he's going to expect a hard time trying to find a club if he's in Ontario, because it's right. Very difficult getting members. You may have to travel a little bit to get into a club. Mm-hmm. But when you do join a club, they teach you the club level handgun safety course. They will teach you the proper mechanics of shooting a firearm. And if you get a really good club, they will teach you proper sight alignment, proper grip, proper stance, and get you on target.
Does he actually say what handguns he owns? Or?
No, he's just getting his restricted.
He's just getting resources, yeah. So he doesn't have any.
Now, what I'm wondering is when he says 9mm x19, is that just standard 9mm ammo?
Well, there's 9x19, 9x21, 9x23. So that's the regular 9x19 is 9mm Luger.
Oh, see, I I always thought 9mm was 9mm.
What I would do is that I wouldn't go right into a 9mm right away. I would join a club, and I would start with a 22, work on your proficiency first, get to learn the basic operational controls of a handgun, and work on your proficiency first. And once you're proficient with a 22, then work up to getting a center fire. It's a cost thing, too, because a center fire is going to cost you a heck of a lot more to learn how to shoot than a 22.
Right.
And don't do what I did and go out and buy 45s.
I did that. I bought a 9mm first because I figured I had lots of 22 rifles. What did I need a 22 pistol for? And after about 6 months, I went out and I bought a 22 pistol. It's just costing so much to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't do what I did when I went to my ATT and they said buy a 22 and then they give you .357 and the 40 to do your test with.
Yeah, see, that's not.
That was fun.
Awesome. What most clubs do is that they start you on the different action types. You'll get to learn how to fire double action, single action, autoloader, and then they'll introduce you to center fire and work your way up. The advantages of joining a club, a lot of clubs have leagues, so you can learn how to maybe join a bullseye league. That'll teach you how to shoot a pistol one-handed. And a lot of clubs also have PPC, which is it's a stationary pistol competition. Mm-hmm. But join a club and join some club leagues. Get some actual practical training first, and then maybe take a look at what competitions interest you, because there's a lot of different disciplines out there.
Right.
I'm voting cowboy action.
Right, so you'll have your single-action revolvers in that one. So if you want single-action revolvers, then you talk to George.
Well, I think go 45s.
A good example, as a club, just an example, would be Silverdale, for example.
We talked about Silverdale.
Well, see, they've got cowboy action, I believe, and they have they have IPSC, and they've got trap and skeet. So you can try all different types of disciplines at one location. Some clubs don't have any leagues at all, so it's nice to find a club.
He doesn't indicate what part
where he's from.
Yeah.
So the process to get into competitive shooting, that was his next. So, Thomas, it's exactly what you said. Try something out, and then inquire. Maybe join a league at your club, and then look on some of the like Gun Nuts site. You can actually go on there and they list IPSC, all kinds of different
Well, if you're going to get into a sanctioned league, like, you know, George would tell you, if you for cowboy action, you have to join SASH, then you have to take I believe a holster certification course for cowboy action. Is there not, George?
No.
There's not? Where IPSC, it's an actual, you have to sign up for the Black Badge course, and it's a 2-day testing course. And IPSC, for example, they want you to have some practical holster experience before you even take the course. So I would just get out there and try as many different things as I can and just find out what you like. You might want to be a cowboy like George.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, best thing to do is like find a range that's near you that has a lot of activities. Find out what days, because usually they'll have practice days, and go out on a day that they practice, that they're having a practice. I can't speak for the IPSC guys, but I know, like with Cowboy, everyone's more than happy to have you step up to the line and give it a try on a practice day. And it'll give you some hands-on experience. You know, you'll be able to try probably a bunch of different guns. They'll walk you through it, and you'll get to basically test drive whatever competition shooting you're interested in.
Right. And then, so the other thing is he's looking at the best overall handgun for 9mm 19x19. An ammo. So right.
Chambered in 45.
So you have to try them out.
You do.
Go to the gun store, too.
If you join a club, usually most people are more than happy to let a new shooter try the gun. It's a real personal thing. Kelly likes 9mm. Other people like a steel frame. It's how it fits your hand and how you shoot. Like, I can't shoot a Glock if my life depended on it. The trigger just screws me right up. But you put a CZ in my hand, I'm a lot more accurate with it because the trigger pull. But it's a personal thing. You have to see what fits your hand and what you enjoy. You might not like the muzzle flip of a 9mm Glock because of the weight. You might prefer the heavier CZ frame, or you might even like a 1911. You never know. Right. Try them on and see what fits your hand nicest and what you're most comfortable with.
Right, and then the ammo is going to actually go with whatever you pick. Some ammo works in some guns, and some ammo doesn't work in others. So it depends on what you pick, right?
And, you know, you can't go wrong with either. If like, for example, Glock makes a really good product, CZ makes a really good product, M&P make a nice product, Springfield XT is a nice product. Just try as many as you can and see which one you like the best. And then go buy 1911.
6 hour. And then go buy 1911. No! Remember, we talked about this last show, 1911.
You birdie Cattleman.
Yeah.
45 cool.
Whatever you like. You might like a single action. You might prefer the cowboy guns. Just try everything you can. But I would still suggest start with the 22 autoloader first, work on that. Or you might like a single action. And then once you get some range time in, just take your time. Don't rush into it, whatever you do.
Right. So, Grant, do you have any handguns?
No, I don't.
No? Do you think about getting any?
I have my restricted, but I haven't bought anything yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm leaning towards the Glock, but there's also that FN pistol that Trevor has, the FNS.
That's supposed to be a really nice gun.
Yeah, he'll have to bring it up with him when he comes to the charity shoot.
Have you fired a Glock before?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Glock 34, the long slide 9mm.
I've tried that one. It wasn't too bad. A friend of mine had one, and he had the bigger backstrap, and he had it all covered in grip tape, so it actually stuck in my hand. And it was accurate, and he had the trigger work done on it. It's a nice gun.
My favorite.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I'd go with the long side, but that's the one that I've shot.
When I was interviewed by the RCMP for my license, she asked me why I was going for my restricted. I said, I don't know. It's part of a combo course. I get $50 off. She goes, that's a good reason. I'm like, I have no interest or intentions of buying a handgun, but at least I'll have it, and I save $50. And she goes, that's a pretty good deal. And then I joined Cowboy Action and bought two handguns. It was who knew?
Well, you know, I didn't even know I was getting my restricted. Because
how do you not know?
When I picked up the book, it was back in 95, and both courses were combined.
Okay.
So I just had to learn everything in the book. And the guy that actually tested me, I didn't take the course. I just challenged the test. And the guy that tested me was the same guy that taught me firearm safety when I was 15 when I went for my hunting license. So I just went in, and he had the firing line set up, and I did everything I read in the book. And I didn't realize till 4 or 5 years later when I went to buy some ammunition that the guy at the clerk at the gun store said, you've got restricted status. I said, no, I don't. And he said, yeah, call the CFO. And apparently I did. When I filled out the paperwork, I didn't ask for it. I just asked.
Oh, it was automatic.
Yeah, I didn't know that I had it. So.
Yeah, anyone that's going for their license, I don't even know why we have two separate licenses. It should just be one license. But anyone going for their license, like when Wanda goes for hers, that's what I've said to her. I said, take the two of them, because usually if you take both of them at once, you get a bit of a discount, because you never know.
Cheaper.
Like with me, when I got my license, I had no interest in handguns or ever owning one. And, you know, boom, I end up in Cowboy Action. I own a whole slew of pistols now.
All right, so back to Mark.
Okay.
Sorry.
Come on, you're supposed to keep us on track.
I know.
You're the call, you're the lead host.
You're supposed to wrangle up these squirrels and keep them on track.
As the world turns. Anyways, so he was asking the last question, is there anything I need as far as levels and credentials? Well, he needs to get his restricted first, right? And then check it out.
Does IDPA have a holster course that you have to take?
Mm.
Or do they just kind of piggyback on the black badge? If you have your black badge, they're happy.
I'm not sure with IDPA. PBC officially, no. If you shoot in a range that runs a CSSA PPC, yes, you have to have holster certification. The official governing body for PPC is CPCA, and there is no holster certification for PPC. But if your range is insured through the CSSA, they want you to take the course.
So it's just dependent on the range and what you
want to
do.
Yeah. Hold on. They want you to take the course that doesn't exist?
I just
wanted to make sure I heard that correctly.
There's a show on the can for Tom where I go into PPC. And the CPCA, excuse me, it's buried in the show notes, they actually got the patent letter, so they control PPC in Canada, not the CSSA. And the CSSA used to support it because they have a PPC committee, but Randy was telling me he only teaches one course a year now for PPC for the CSSA, and that's usually at the Port Perry Riding Gun Club. So if you want to shoot, if your range is insured through the CCSSA and you want to shoot PPC, you have to be holster certified. That's the rule for their discipline. But if you want to shoot it officially in a competition across Canada that's not a CSSA-run match, there is no holster certification.
Now, what about...
Ontario does things differently.
Because we're special.
Now, what about... Well, I guess once they got the patent letters that they actually controlled the discipline, the CSSA had no more input on it, and they sort of lost interest in it.
Now, what about 3-gun? Is that usually run through IPSC?
IPSC does do 3-gun, and IDPA do 3-gun. Now, I think there is a certification now for defensive pistol. There never used to be, and I think they instigated about 3-4 years ago.
So do they have their own course then?
Yeah, I imagine they would.
For IDPA?
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing that he's going to have to do is check in with his local...
You join a club and they'll tell you the rules they have to follow. But there's certain disciplines where there is, you cannot participate in the discipline unless you take some type of certification for it.
Yeah. But he's on the right track. He's getting his restricted.
Yeah.
And again, the best thing is to go out to their practice.
Some ranges will just have their own holster certification that they accept. I know Dave Burke teaches holster certification courses that are accepted by the CFO. So if your range has its own in-house league, they may offer their own certification that's acceptable. But get your license, and I would join a club. That's what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm. So we have another email. It's actually a follow-up. It's to the one that we read last week from Mike, and it's in regards to his... I'm going to answer it because I talked to Dave. Anyways.
You go, girl.
Okay. So Mike, if everybody remembers, he had some problems with his AR mags not working for him. So I did speak with Dave when I went to see him yesterday at SFRC, and he said the modifications that that Mike even made to your mags, that's probably why the bolt is failing to lock back. And he actually recommended that you ditch the Palmer mags. So just stick with the metal. He says they work better and they're cheaper as well. And and it sounds like the pig mags, they're working fine for him. I think that's what Mike said, that the pig mags are working fine, but still get a few metal mags in there. I actually talked to Kevin too, and he said the exact same thing too. He's got a lot of pig mags, and he says they're okay, but he prefers to use the metal ones as well, especially when you're talking competitions. And I think that's what Mike's going to be doing with it. If he's taking his AR, he's looking at competitions. So if you're going to do that, stick with the metal mags. And that is cheaper. You know, it's not going to fail when you're in the middle of a competition than that too. So. Yeah, it's the proverbial, Dave says, it's because you modified it. That's the reason why it's not working.
Well, I think he was modifying them because they weren't working.
He modified it because they weren't coming out.
Oh, they weren't dropping free.
Yeah, they weren't coming out. They weren't sticking. They were sticking. I think that's what he said. So,
is he using it in an AR or in a Benelli MR1?
He says AR, so.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't get the polymer mags to work in my Benelli. They work fine in my AR, but not Benelli.
Mm. All right, Grant, are you still here? I think he's having problems. Okay, so let's look at some events. Thomas, do you want to talk about the SummerSlam?
SummerSlam 10 is on July 23rd, 2016 at the Rusty Good Gun Club. Contact the boys at Slamfire. I think they're more than half sold out already, so if you're going, get on it now.
Are you guys going?
No.
No. Okay, thought I'd ask.
No.
We're going to be busy, you know, right before it, so I thought I'd ask.
I'd like to, but I just can't see the cost of going all the way out there and then coming all the way back here for the charity shoot, so.
Yeah.
And then we have, of course, the Canadian Podcasters charity shoot, which would be the following weekend, which would be, what, the 25th? 26th?
For what? The 23rd and the 23rd is July 23rd is SummerSlam.
Or the month before, okay.
So it's the month before. At a point. It's June.
I'm not editing that out. Not a chance.
See the small screen. So it's June. I'm thinking it's July. Okay.
Yes, SummerSlam's on June or July, and we're doing the charity shoot on the 25th of June. So, yes.
I've been harassing Filthy to make sure he comes out to the charity shoot this year.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. So, hopefully they will all be able to make it out here, as well as everybody from out east as well. Filthy's from out east. But it'll be nice if they can all make it. And hopefully, Grant, are you there? Nope, Grant's not there. Yeah, I was hoping that Grant would be able to make it as well, and everybody else that we met at some of our other competitions and that too. And I was going to ask Grant if he had any events happening up in his neck of the woods, but he's not there. So, any other events that you guys know about that's coming up?
No, I didn't look at any of the upcoming events. Most everything's winding down for the fall now.
Yeah, everything pretty much is.
I checked iTunes, both Canadian and US feeds, and we've got nothing again. I also went through our stats to see what other countries are downloading and checked some of theirs, and nothing on theirs as well. So if you've sent in an iTunes review and you're from another country, send us an email so I can look it up and I'll read it on the air. Because iTunes, you have to go country to per country, and there's too many of them to go through. But nothing. There's nothing new on Canada or the U.S.
And if your club has any events coming up, let us know, and we'll put them on show.
And Jason tagged me on Facebook on something, but you know what, Jason? I couldn't make out the writing. It was some sort of press release. But unfortunately, I couldn't quite make it out. He tagged both Matthew and I. So, Jason, I did get it, but I apologize. I wasn't able to read it. It was a little fuzzy.
So, no other rents and no more iTunes. So, send us an iTunes review, everybody.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Give us some 5-star ratings, some reviews. It gets us noticed, and it helps with algorithms and, you know, all that fun stuff. And, you know, gets us noticed and gets the word out. And, you know, it's all good.
So, closing comments. I actually just wanted to let everybody know that we're almost at 500 likes on our Facebook page. So, share our page and tell your friends, because I really like for us to be at 500 this week.
We've got to beat the stupid library.
Oh, God. We got to have something in our own province.
Something related to our own show.
Yeah, we're catching up on Modern Rifleman Radio.
Yeah. True. But... yeah, we have to have something in our own province. Oh, well. Also, tomorrow is the election, so get out and vote tomorrow if you haven't already. And don't forget, it doesn't matter who actually wins, just join our advocacy groups because we'll need people to represent us. Right, George?
Absolutely. Yes. Am I off mute? Yes. Absolutely.
Reform.
Jeez. All right, Preston.
And finally, listen to the other podcasts on the Crusader Podcast Network. There's some great shows out there.
Yeah, there are.
I've been listening to Mike's Reloading show quite a bit.
New Shooter
too.
Canada isn't one of them. Anyways.
I gotta go on mute.
I couldn't help myself.
All right. That being said, yeah.
So, are we closing it out?
Sure. Do you have any shout-outs? George.
No, I don't. Am I off mute?
No?
No.
Yes, you are off mute.
No, I've got...
Oh, my gosh. All right, Thomas, what about you?
Yes, David Coping, North American business agent for Grand Power. Thank you for fixing my slide. It was nice getting the gun back in the same day instead of having to wait months. And for my young cousin, Shannon, who always manages to make me smile.
That's good. It's nice that you can smile. And for me, I'm going to give a shout-out to Grant for joining us tonight. It was great to have him on the show. He's a great guy, and he knows a lot about hunting especially. And hopefully we can actually get him on the show again at some point again soon, because we didn't have a real good chance to say goodbye since his call got dropped. And other than that, we are going to have up and coming in the next couple of weeks. We'll probably have an all-female show. So hopefully Darlene, who wasn't able to join us this evening, will be on that show as well as some of the other ladies that you regularly hear about on the show.
Yeah, is that going to be next week?
Yeah, we're looking at next week. If we can, you know, if all the stars align and all that. If that does happen, it'll be next week, but if not, the week after.
I'm looking forward to it. That the last all-ladies show was very popular. We got a lot of really nice comments back on that.
Yeah, it'll be fun. See what everybody's up to in the past, you know, 3 months since we had our last one.
And, well, there's some new girls that we haven't actually even talked to or listened to that I'm just hearing.
Yep, some people who have written into the show, and we'll have... I believe Crystal is going to join us, Crystal Powers. We got Jewel, who's going to be joining us. We have Edith from Edith and Sticks. We have Stacy from Squirrels as well. And who else am I missing?
Suzanne.
Darlene.
Suzanne.
And Suzanne. And, yeah, I know I'm missing somebody. But, anyways, Darlene, as I said.
Is he back? Grant's back? You there, Grant?
I'm adding him to the call to say
goodbye. Okay, I keep losing the connection.
All of us are... Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be a great show.
And as I promised Thomas that there is a PPC show in the can. We will be doing it when we get a chance. We will bring it out. But there's other things in loop. We have to finish that first. It's going to be a long night tonight. I still got to go to the hospital and have an MRI done later on tonight. Oh, I get an appointment at 3:00 in the morning.
You realize we're still doing the show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Grant.
I'm so tired.
Back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, great.
Just in time to say goodbye.
Whereabouts in the province you live, Grant?
Kapuskasing.
Okay, I can see why we're losing the connection.
I don't know what the deal is with that, to be quite honest with you.
You need a new string on your cup.
That's it. I need a bigger cup, that's all.
There you go.
We just did a huge shout out to you for coming on the show.
Oh, no, thanks, guys. It's been great.
I need to see a few more wheels in those mice to start generating power.
That's it. No, we got lots of hydro dams for that. Don't need mice.
So, yeah.
No, it was good being on. We covered a little bit of ground anyways. It's not. It's hard to do hunting in 40 minutes, but...
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you, if there was anything, I know that with your local gun club, you've had some things that have been going on. Are there any events that are going on that you want to talk about or anything, so just so that we can promote it for you or anything?
There's not really a whole lot going on with our Rod and Gun Club. We have a wild game supper in March, but between now and then. I know that here in the community they tried to organize a Ducks Unlimited banquet back in September, and it fell through because no one bought tickets. I think they're going to try that again in December, but we'll see. Like I say, up here, not many people are into waterfowling. They focus more on moose hunting is the big thing.
Yeah. Okay, so let us know if anything's happening, and we can always put it on, and you're always welcome to come on.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing what I missed.
Yeah, for sure. You'll have to listen.
Yes, you will. We missed you.
Oh, thank you. I can hear the bus wheels spinning already.
No, unlike you, we're nice. We don't run you over every show.
I had to work. I didn't finish work at 8 o'clock, and the 401 was shut down at the 400, so I had to cut across to 407 and drive like a maniac, but I made it by 9 like I said I would.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thomas, have you got some hunting experience?
I got my hunting license. It was funny. Most guys my age, is the day they turn 16, they got the driver's license. I got my hunting license the day I turned 15. My stepfather was really into hunting, so when I hunted a lot when I was younger.
Okay.
Mostly birds, pheasant, grouse, some woodcock. I haven't done partridge. I actually went deer hunting twice, and the deal was with the landowner, bucks only, no does. And of course, that's all I saw with does. So I haven't had any luck harvesting any big animals, but I do enjoy bird hunting, coyote hunting. I've done a lot of predator hunting.
Nice.
I've got, Terry bought me a Marlin bolt action 22 Magnum last Christmas, but I haven't actually had a chance to hunt with it yet, but I'm looking forward to getting some yotes with that thing. My nephew brought some property up in Huntsville, so I have an open-tation to go up there and call a local horde of coyotes.
Calling a local what?
Hordes.
Glad you got the D in there the second time around. Thank you, Thomas.
Oh, God.
Come on, come on, lead host.
Yeah, this is usually where it falls apart anyways. Okay, so that's it for tonight's show, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for subscribing, downloading, and listening. Until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kids shooting.
And keep it classy. You got anything for us there, Grant?
How about everyone go vote?
Yeah!
Okay. And take it away, Preston.
Reform! Remember, so the Conservatives vote Monday, Liberals vote Tuesday, and NDP vote on Wednesday. Just remember that.
Have a great week, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I really like 22 now. 45 Lever with the Winchester tag. I like my double barrel.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at host@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
Trying to take the guns off of us, 'cause I ain't gonna shoot anyone, and no one shoots at me, 'cause I got a gun. I like guns, I like the way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. God made the trees, God made you, well, hell, he even made me. And he gave me this voice so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.